You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. Every Voice Matters. Missed you last week for Thanksgiving, but I hope all of you had a wonderful time with your family and friends and are staying safe and healthy and well. I am excited to have our guest here today. Justin Robinson is actually somebody I've known for about 15 years, and we've been through many adventures together with students over the years in various settings. Good morning, good afternoon, Justin. Welcome, and thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Dori. It's a pleasure to be here. I was remembering 15 years ago when I first met you, when I was just brand new as a wilderness therapist.
Yep.
Yeah, you were one of the first consultants I worked with.
Yep.
And really did a great job of breaking me in to that new world. And every step along my journey from wilderness to therapeutic boarding school and now to working with young adults, you've just been a great support and fun to collaborate. We've had some adventures in supporting neurodiverse individuals, young adults and teenagers through the years for sure.
We have, and I think, you know, back then, 15 years ago, when neurodiverse students, kids on the spectrum, as they say, Asperger's, autism, it wasn't as recognized. You know, they were the quirky kids, but it wasn't as recognized as it is today. And it was hard because, as we know, they don't read social cues and they take things literally, and you know, it was a different type of communication. But we've all come a long way in working with these adolescents and young adults, and excited to talk with you today about, you know, neurodiversity and employment, because that is, as we saw from the questions that were submitted, on employers' minds as well, and on families' minds, and what that means and how it can be beneficial. And I know you have lots to share with us. You kind of started off your bumpy road, your adolescent years back in Maui, Hawaii. I think you said you were actually picking pineapples.
Yeah, no, that's when I discovered my what I wanted to do. I mean, I had a rocky start, certainly in my adolescent and teenage years. I have dyslexia, ADHD, which trying to navigate the world, you know, the dyslexia was diagnosed, the ADHD, not so much. I was in both honors classes and special education classes, you know, all on the same day. And so it was kind of a confusing,
yes,
way to try to navigate my early years. So, you know, school wasn't my favorite thing. And luckily I found a program they used to have in Maui, Hawaii, where I worked and went to school and had some fantastic role models. And once I realized that, hey, you could make a career out of loving teens and mentoring and supporting, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
So you've been doing this for about 25 years now. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of look at that my time in Hawaii is on the other side of the fence, as the receiver of services,
right,
as my beginning. Because really, you know, once I graduated, they're graduated from high school. You know, as soon as I was old enough to get an entry level job, working with, in fact, I met my wife, Janet, about 25 years ago, 27 years ago, working at the Utah Boys Ranch is what it was called then.
Right.
Being, so that was the residential support.
Therapeutic boarding school.
Yeah.
And then you moved into wilderness. I think that's where I first met you.
Yeah. With Aspiro.
Yeah. At Aspiro. And worked with, you know, several of my youth there. And I'm actually still in touch with the very first student that you and I ever worked with there.
He was,
you know, I call him still to this day my most adventurous runner. And, I think he ran three times and kept us all on our toes. But yeah, he has graduated college and has a great job and is living in the Chicago area. And yeah, we still, all these years, we still stay in touch.
So yeah, it's so fun for me, you know, as we talk about these people from long ago, to watch them grow up. You know, again, we talked about how I started as a receiver, you know, as a student or a client in a program. And there are a handful of clients or students of mine that are now in the industry supporting and providing services to other, you know, youth and young adults.
Right.
So it's really fun to see that, like, from being the receiver to mentoring others, and now they're out in the industry working and helping and supporting others as well.
Well, you know, and so now you're working, you're co-director and co-founder of a program called New Perspectives for Young Adults. And your focus is on working with the neurodiverse young adults. And you've been doing that now for how long?
It's been about a decade, about 8 or 9 years, I think.
And, you know, what brought you to the point of realizing that that particular group of students was something you were passionate about?
You know, so I didn't start out, once I realized I wanted to be a therapist. I got my undergraduate degree in recreation therapy. Autism wasn't even on my radar. In fact, I got very little education about autism and wasn't looking at serving youth kind of through that lens. But early on, even when I was still an intern therapist, more experienced therapists were having issues with some of the clients on their caseload, and I don't know why they threw them at me, but they did. And it was fascinating to get to know. And I think, you know, while it's certainly been helpful to re-educate myself and become more of an expert working with that population, but just for me, they piqued my curiosity because of the uniqueness that I saw, you know, right away. And not that every individual is unique. The other teens I was working with obviously were unique and had their parts about them that I appreciated and enjoyed. But there was something about the more complex, the more individualized thinker that just captured my fascination. And it probably pinged off, again, my own neurodiversity. There's probably enough autism in you. I mean, my wife and I, we have one of our biological children is on the spectrum. I didn't know I was going to have a child on the spectrum when I kind of gravitated towards this population, but funny how it works out.
Yeah.
It certainly came in handy as I've been parenting my own young adult on the spectrum.
Well, and like I said, over the years, and we're still continuing to learn more and more and more about these children and these young adults and even older adults. I've worked with a couple of older adults in the last several years that weren't even, you know, diagnosed as being on the spectrum until they were in their late 20s, sometimes even early 30s. And, you know, unfortunate because of all the struggles that they went through, you know, with relationships and not being able to hold a job, especially, and, you know, just feeling out of sync until they actually got the diagnosis, and then all the pieces start to fit together.
Yeah. And I think that's still very common. I mean, as we talk about employment and neurodiversity, you know, you may have someone who's autistic and high functioning, you know, with high functioning Asperger's that you work with already, and you may not know it because, you know, for some, it's still more invisible than others. And especially, I think, you know, as more attention has been drawn to autism, people are looking for it and seeing it more. And so people are getting diagnosed and getting support, but there's still a lot of people out there undiagnosed for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, just to kind of reference your background, you know, behind you, some of the things that are on your wall there, and we're going to talk about this a little later, but these are actually some of the art projects that your students have completed and work on.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to use this opportunity to brag about some of the students that we're working with and our attempts to help find them ways to find employment, make some money, become more independent through becoming art. You know, they are artists and artisans, but we've created a workshop that we call the Creative Space, and our new, brand new today, Dory. We're going live with our website, Expressions of Ingenuity. We've been selling these items that our students have been making at farmers markets. But we are live. You can support a neurodiverse artist today by getting online and purchasing one of the handcrafted items.
Well, I will make sure.
A lathe and some old-fashioned handyman workmanship, or a laser engraver or printer. We've got kind of a cutting-edge technology going and old-fashioned craftsmanship.
I'll make sure that we have that website up on your page so that people can learn more and can actually go there. And there's still time to do some Christmas shopping, so maybe they can check out and see what's there. Absolutely. You know, and I know we're going to be talking about, you know, neurodiversity and employment. Why is that such an important topic, Justin?
Well, one, because there are a lot of neurodiverse individuals out there. You know, I was looking over, trying to brush up yesterday on just what the current statistics says. And it's confusing because there's a lot of different numbers out there.
Right.
But the CDC, for example, says 1 in 4, 1 in 5 individuals are disabled in some capacity. One study I looked at said 85% of college-educated people on the spectrum.
Wow.
These are people who completed a college degree, and still a majority of them are struggling with employment. So these individuals are out there. They're talented. Again, as I showcased the art and the you know, whether it's talented artists or, I mean, I work with kids with the brains of a NASA engineer or a rocket scientist. But just because you're the smartest person in the room doesn't mean that employment is easy for you.
Absolutely. Yes.
And we live in a culture where, you know, one of the first questions we're asked when we meet someone is, well, what do you do? And so our identities are tied to our jobs and employment. And if I'm answering that question, I'm unemployed, I don't have a job. I mean, it has a huge impact on our psychological well-being, on our self, you know, on our identity and self-esteem. So it's really important that we find better solutions to help these individuals be not just employed, but employed in a situation that's healthy for them.
And something that can be long-term for them too, something that they can start to build a future on. I think there was something on 60 Minutes maybe a month or two ago about certain technology companies now, tech companies, that have set up interviewing in a whole different way for those that are applying who are on the spectrum, rather than sitting down and doing the traditional talk interview. They actually set them up with games to play, puzzles to put together as they're speaking with them about what their passions are. And it was interesting that they had somebody sitting next to them who's not on the spectrum doing the same puzzle, and these wonderful young adults just ate them up. They would,
I love that. That's fantastic.
The puzzle in like less than a minute, and it would take the other person, you know, 5 minutes or more to figure it out. So they do have a different way of thinking and looking at ways of solving problems and challenges, and they enjoy it.
No, but that's a great example of, you know, just recognizing our interview process is really biased towards specific skills and attributes that may or may not have much to do with the actual job that you're interviewing for. Someone who, you know, is quick of the tongue and makes good eye contact and good nonverbal and communication, they're going to get the opportunity to show off what they can do and try on a job. But if I can't even get in the door, because for me, that's horrifying, possibly traumatic for a person on the spectrum, for example, to go through the interviewing process, it can be extremely stress provoking.
Yeah, very painful.
And like you're showing with these newer, more innovative ways to interview that really measure some of the skills that you'll need in the job. You know, again, I think it's important to be more mindful when you're interviewing. Does my approach to hiring really reflect the skills that are going to be important for the job.
Yeah. And I think some of the questions that we got submitted too were actually from employers, you know, wanting to know more information. So it's great that there's that interest.
It is great. And you're seeing more and more. I was really excited. Again, I kind of was looking around yesterday, knowing that I'd be talking to you today. And it'd been a while. It'd been a while since I'd searched terms like neurodiversity and employment online. And wow, you know, in the last 5 years, there's an explosion of information out there. That's just a reflection that more people are recognizing the need. More people are recognizing that these employees can be good for business. It's not just good for them to have a job.
No, they have great
skills. It's good for your company to hire a talented neurodiverse individual.
Well, let's get to some of our questions, and then we can expand out even more, you know, on this topic. You know, Aaron in Vermont asks, you know, what challenges can neurodivergent people face in the workplace?
Yeah, I mean, we could do a whole show on that question alone, Dory. You know, I think what I want to emphasize, because we could go through a list, you know, depending on your limitations, you know, each limitation or each challenge presents unique challenges. But I think if you just look at stress and overwhelm, and if you look both at the culture of the organization, because part of the neurodiversity movement is to recognize that some of the disabilities and struggles that neurodiverse people have aren't just solely the responsibility of their internal workings or their wiring in their brain, but it's also because we've created a culture where that if you're not in the mainstream, it's harder to fit in. If you're that square peg trying to fit into that round hole, whose responsibility is it? Do you need to find a way to cram yourself in the hole, or do we need to adjust the culture of our organization?
And jobs that are going to be more beneficial just based on environmental factors versus, I mean, I just can't imagine someone on the spectrum working in a quote unquote fast food restaurant where so much is coming at them. It's so loud. It's so busy. There's bells ringing. There's, you know, all this going on around them. It seems like that would be overwhelming.
Absolutely. In fact, that's that specific challenge is I'm working with young adults and trying to help, you know, myself and our job coaches help them find jobs as they develop into careers. You know, fast food is one of the most accessible jobs out there. So it's not too hard for me to coach a neurodiverse individual to get hired at a McDonald's or a fast food restaurant. But what we found is they're not gonna keep that job. They're not gonna thrive in that job. And again, I'm speaking in generalities because one option is you always have to look at each individual.
Absolutely.
But in a general sense, yeah, something that's fast paced, something that there's frequent change, a lot of social demands, a lot of multi-tasking, sensory issues. You know, just think from a sensory perspective. The smells, the sounds, you know, I have some sensory issues. If I'm in a room where people and there's multiple conversations going on and I need to focus in on just one conversation, after, you know, a few hours of that, I need to walk away from the situation. I need to go just get some quiet and peace.
Yes, and so I agree with you.
Getting a job is great, but making sure we find a job that fits the needs of the individual. And so, yes, you know, I think there are some environments and careers you mentioned, like tech industry, you know, certain industries are recognizing that they are a good fit for neurodiverse individuals, for high functioning autistic individuals, for example, and are now targeting, you know, in their hiring process, you know, how can we find these individuals? How can we get the message out that we are interested in them?
Alex in California says, how can hiring neurodiverse employees actually benefit your organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, the first thing is, yes, hiring neurodiverse individuals can
improve your organization. Because they have different talents.
You know, I was looking at, something that talked about, you know, how the difference of the 99 versus that one, that outlier might be that one person in your organization that recognizes, you know, what everyone could be doing a little bit differently, because they're not going to be thinking and looking at things through the same lens,
right?
Maybe as someone else. And so when we're open to that, you know, a lot of innovation that have benefited the majority of the population, you know, think of the Thomas Edisons. I mean, there's rumors about historical figures.
Absolutely.
Elon Musk last year on Saturday Night Live came out as having Asperger's syndrome. So oftentimes it's these neurodivergent individuals that can really not just get the job done, but make the job better or change, you know, best case scenario, change the world, make it a better place. But the other thing I think is really significant is by being more sensitive to the needs of the neurodiverse individuals and recognizing that you don't necessarily know, chances are if you're an employer, you're already hiring a neurodiverse individual.
You don't know it yet.
Because you don't know it. You know, some people's disability is more hidden. Some people are more comfortable and trusting of you as a manager that they feel like it's safe to disclose that they have a disability. So by creating a culture in your organization that values wellness and mental health, where you check in, not just on job performance, but how are you doing? Are you feeling stressed? Are you overwhelmed? You know, really creating that culture. What research is showing is not only make it a better work environment for the neurodiverse individual, but how many people do we know who are stressed out with their job, who are succeeding but struggling, not thriving? And so managers who get good at supporting neurodiverse individuals are also just going to be better managers in general, because they're more observant and in tune with the needs of their all their employees, not just the neurodiverse employees, and really creating a culture of wellness, which when the brain isn't overwhelmed and stressed, we all perform better.
Absolutely.
And so we have such a culture that emphasizes production and getting things done, and let's stretch our people to get the most out of them. But you may just find as an employer, hey, if I value wellness and the needs of the individual, might impact my bottom line. I might actually.
Everybody wins.
Exactly.
You know, so Ben in Idaho, kind of along the same lines, is, you know, how do you manage neurodiverse employees? And I think, as you said, a lot of people, a lot of employers most likely have people on the spectrum already working in their company, and they're just not identified as that. But they might be the person who's not social, who's not in the big gatherings, who doesn't necessarily make eye contact with everyone, you know, little things like that. And I think oftentimes they kind of get labeled as, oh, they're just not interested, or they don't really care, or, you know, they have judgments about those things without knowing.
Or they're just stubborn, they're lazy. There's all sorts of judgments we make when we're not curious to really look a little bit deeper and say what's underneath some of these issues I have. And again, am I creating a culture where if an employee is struggling, they can talk to me, that they feel safe to disclose that they have a disability or a diagnosis, or that they just need some help.
Or they just need some help. Yeah. You know, Clay in Colorado says, what are the advantages and challenges of the hiring process of neurodiverse individuals? So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, what I saw in 2020, the different hiring process that they were going through. What are you discovering, or what are some of your young adults discovering when they are actually going out and looking for jobs and having to go through that hiring process? And are they able to verbalize for themselves you know, that they need a different way of connecting in order to gain employment.
You know, I would say, you know, I love your example, and I wish that's what I was seeing when I send my young adults out to interview and seek employment. And so, you know, there's always, it kind of starts with the big question of, you know, do I disclose in a job interview that I have some challenges? I'm competing for this job. And so it kind of starts there. Let's weigh the cost benefits of just being upfront and saying, yeah, I have autism and this is why you should give me a shot. And this is why I can benefit your organization. But here's the things I might need support with. And that's a really scary thing. And most people won't do it.
No, it makes you
because really there's not enough evidence.
Yes,
that you'll be supported if you're that honest.
Makes you feel very vulnerable.
An opportunity.
You know, I worked with a student. About 10 years ago. She was very dyslexic, and it wasn't recognized until her junior year in high school, and so she was so frustrated because all these years she had struggled and had been mislabeled. And so once she found out, one of the requirements, you know, on her IEP was that she take all her tests verbally rather than written, because they found out when she took a written test, she would like get a 68%. But if they gave her the test verbally, she was getting 98%. So it was that writing piece. And she ended up advocating for herself when she went to college, and actually telling her teachers, I've got to take my tests verbally, you know, or I'm going to fail. And ultimately she was, after college, she was offered a job, and part of the job interview was a psychological type. It wasn't psychological testing, but it was all of this paperwork that they wanted her to fill out. And she said, I'll fail this. I mean, she just told them, you know, I'm dyslexic, but if you want to spend time asking me these questions, I'll answer them honestly. And so it was a good story of seeing somebody who was willing to advocate for themselves, but it does make you very vulnerable. There were a lot of people who said, no, I'm not doing that. Or what's wrong with you? Or why can't you just do it the regular way? And very frustrating.
No, it's a tough decision, and there are risks, right? You might lose the opportunity to have another opportunity or to try out the position because of that honesty and transparency. But there's certainly research that says that, you know, that self-advocacy and coming to terms yourself and then putting it out there, because maybe you'll miss out on some jobs, but then when you do get hired, it's much more likely to be the right environment for you. And you know ahead of time, okay, these people are aware, and they've chosen to hire me, and they're more likely to support me and be responsive when I later on communicate that I have a need and need some accommodation. It also highlights in that example, though, just, you know, because of a disability in one area, you know, if being a good speller as a dyslexic individual is the top priority, I'm going to lose out on a lot of opportunities. Good thing for spell check, though.
That's right. And Grammarly. I now use
opened Grammarly. Up doors of possibility for a lot of individuals who struggle with spelling. But, you know, when I did my standardized school scores, you know, my spelling was really down low, but everything else was much higher. Thank goodness, you know, I could capitalize on those strengths and find, you know, whether it's spell check or a wonderful wife who will read over my college papers. You know, once I can get accommodation, none of us are good at everything.
Oh my gosh.
Whether we're neurodiverse or neurotypical, we all have strengths, we all have weaknesses. And so, you know, the more we can be aware of both our limitations and strengths and be comfortable letting other people know our strengths and limitations, it also paves the way for the next employee
Yes.
You know, when I'm honest and disclose my neurodiversity or disabilities, when people like Elon Musk or athletes come out as struggling with their mental health.
And be able to talk about it. Yes.
It makes it more safe for everyone to talk about. And so I certainly, while I believe it's the choice of every individual and it can't be made by a parent or a therapist or a job coach, you know, how transparent to be, I try to nudge people in that direction.
What are the ages of the students that you work with there at New Perspectives?
I mean, we've worked as young as a 17-year-old who's about to turn 18, getting ready to bridge adolescence to adulthood, all the way up to early 30s. Mostly, though, we're in that 18 to 24, 25 range.
Okay. And do you find differences in those that are, you know, say 17, 18, 19, and really venturing out into the work world for the first time, just as challenging as those who are in their late 20s, maybe early 30s, and have been on this merry-go-round for years, still trying to figure it out?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, if they're coming to me, it's because they're struggling, right? Not just because they're neurodiverse. And so there are neurodiverse people who are having more success with employment, for example. But if they're coming to work with me and my program, it's whether they're younger, you know, more towards 18 or a little bit older, they haven't had a lot of successes. And so what I come to expect, unfortunately, is they're walking the door to meet with me, and their confidence about employment, the way they conceptualize employment, you know, they're moved away from dreaming about what I want to do when I grow up. And they're in a very overwhelmed mode of, am I going to be able to do this?
Right.
And is anyone going to want to hire me? And that may be because of their negative experience they had in their educational background, or it may be because they've been hired and fired or
multiple
times. They're overwhelmed by the whole concept of going out and having an interview. And so you really have to kind of learn about where does this fear and anxiety come from, and meet them where they're at. You know, we have students like Harrison, who I have his website up here. He's a student who works for us. He has his own website. He's created his own Harrison's Laser Wood and Crafts.
You need to send that to me also.
Sample his merchandise, but he's really just taking initiative and become an entrepreneur,
right?
Which is an interesting choice for some people on the spectrum, especially if they can get some support, because then you really can carve your own niche,
right?
And create the culture that works for you.
Yes.
But then we have students who really, without our creative space, without being able to be employed through myself and my staff, would really have a hard time finding employment. I mean, again, maybe we could get them a job, but they're still working on not only confidence, but the executive functioning skills, like, can I show up to work on time? And so, you know,
all the little things.
You can have everything from an Elon Musk, who's running a big billion-dollar corporation, to someone who, yeah, we're just working on showing up.
You know, someone like Elon Musk, though, also, he has had a lot of support, a lot of people in his corner. It wasn't like he opened the door and did this by himself. And I think that's another piece of the process, just like you said, athletes and, you know, perhaps musicians and artists and other people, you know, who have challenges. It would be great for them to speak up and also talk about the support that they had in order to get to where they are, because this isn't something that you do all alone in the corner and then one day, you know, life is just grand. You have this great support system and people who understand you and support you and help others get to know you as a part of the process.
And again, you know, neurodiversity is such a wide range. Autism spectrum disorder is everyone from someone who realistically is not going to be employed. And our goal is just to create the highest level of independence that they can have to someone who could, with support, be running an organization employing thousands of people. I mean, that's quite a range that all can fit into one term, neurodiversity. And that can be a problem because sometimes the parents see and want to believe their kid's the next Elon Musk or tech CEO or
NASA
and doesn't realize how crippling their anxiety or issue is, again, just because they have this amazing IQ score or, you know, there's evidence they are brilliant. There's also evidence that their challenges and limitations are very real.
Absolutely.
And so being honest with yourself as a parent or as an individual about, you know, what is the right goal for me to attain and where am I now? Because that's where you always have to start. You know, getting to work is where I'm at now, then I need to work on being able to show up.
That's my goal for
If I can got that down and I, you know, no one's going to hire an employee who doesn't show up.
That's right.
So you just kind of move up that hierarchy of skills, you know, reaching for the best version of yourself.
Jackie in Colorado asks, are there any books or guides to help employers who are hiring neurodiverse personnel?
You know, I think that's a good question. There's not one resource that I would highlight. Like I was saying before, I was really pleased. Just yesterday, as I was perusing the internet, you know, type in neurodiversity in the workplace, type in, you know, really just type in the question you have, and you're going to find a lot of resources out there now. That wasn't the case 5 years ago.
No,
you're going to find a lot of books. One thing that I would advocate as you're looking for, whether it's a website or a book, look to the professionals, but look to the neurodiverse individuals themselves. You know, Temple Grandin is perhaps the most famous individual with autism and who's also an author. But there are many others who write from the perspective of this is what has worked for me.
Right.
You know, to study success stories, people who have learned to navigate their disability and still have a rich and meaningful life, I think are some of the best sources of information to pull from. And so that would be my advice, like pull from multiple sources, look to the expert, but make sure you're not leaving out the neurodiverse individuals because there's a wealth of great
information.
Yeah.
Carlo here in Colorado says, you know, what kind of adjustments would I need to make in my workplace in order to hire a neurodiverse person? And I guess a part of that depends on what your workplace is. I actually know that Carla has an arts and crafts store.
So, yes.
So I was really happy to see her question. And, you know, I think what we talked about a little bit is, yes, they need to show up for work, number one. You know, it's more the environment that I could see somebody working in an arts and crafts store or a Lego store, or even a gaming place. You know, a lot of these kids are very good at gaming and being in an environment that they're comfortable with and familiar with.
Exactly. And again, an arts and crafts store usually isn't the hustle and bustle of a Burger King or McDonald's.
Right.
So it might be more of a pace that is ideal for a neurodiverse individual.
But all those examples
emphasize, Dori, is where is the intrinsic motivation? We all do better when we're working in a field that we're passionate about.
Absolutely.
That is not just a job, it's something I care about.
Yes.
So if I like art, if I like crafts, and yes, you know, there are books about specifically art on the spectrum. And so that is a, you know, some of the most famous artists that we are admiring the artwork.
Absolutely.
And again, the art, the handcrafted pens and things, if you're watching the video, you can see that I have paintings and puzzles and skateboards.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. Let's talk about, you know, what you've got there, the artwork that you've got, the website, again, that people can go to, and I'll make sure that I get that posted. What are some of the projects that the kids are doing that are working with you? I know that Don Bauer, who works with you in your business development, gave me some coasters that were made by one of your students that have etchings on them with sayings. And I actually gifted those to a friend of mine who is building their home. And they just love them and said, where can I get more? And so let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, they can get more coasters at harrisonscraftstore.com.
Okay.
And I mentioned Harrison earlier as one of our students who's really taken initiative and blossomed. He's purchased his own laser engravers and CNC machine. I'm not up to speed on all the technology. Again, we use some cutting edge stuff and some just classic handcrafted, like a lathe, for example. He's made coasters. You mentioned, right here on the wall behind me is his impossible puzzle. I think he sold a lot of these puzzles by calling it the impossible puzzle, because especially here in Utah, there's a lot of people who like games, board games, puzzles.
Challenged.
And when they're told it's impossible, they say, for me, if you tell me a puzzle is impossible, I want nothing to do with it.
But that's right. It's like, oh, okay, I'll take your word for it.
But some see it as a challenge. But what we're trying to do. Dory, are you familiar with PRT, Pivotal Response Training? It's an offshoot of ABA, which is one of the most common formats for the skill building with people with autism and other disabilities. The difference, though, is its emphasis on finding the intrinsic motivation. So we have this workshop that as new students come in and out and graduate, it's going to evolve based on what they care about. We had a student recently who took a college pottery class. So we rushed out and bought 3 pottery wheels. I've been spending Wednesday mornings myself having one of my students coach me on how to
make pottery. Oh, I love pottery.
I got a long way to go. But we're learning like things like working on a lathe and working on the pottery wheel. It's also a form of practicing mindfulness. And mindfulness is a great way to bring that stress and overwhelm down. And so not only are we honing in on what are the intrinsic motivations, so if a student prefers digital art, then we're buying a drawing board and finding him someone who can mentor and tutor him and that. If we don't have the staff who can be the mentor, we'll roll him in the course or we'll find a community volunteer. But rather than say, hey, we make pens on the lathe, and I hope you like the lathe, we say, what do you get excited about? And we see where we can bend to them. Now, not every workplace can be as flexible and as creative as
right.
we are. And we're not just making pens, like I say, we're teaching mindfulness, we're teaching all sorts of job-related skills through working out the creative space. But it's been a fun project and new for us. It stemmed from the challenges we were finding getting good jobs for our students and saying, hey, what if we created a space ourselves? And what business could we do so we can be the employers of some of our students who are struggling finding other employment opportunities. And it's been so fun to just watch the quality, as we get better and better at pulling the talent. The laptop that I'm talking to you on is actually sitting on a coffee table that's made in the same style hold up. I know a charcuterie board. My staff always teases me because I don't know how to say charcuterie board. But this mix of wood and resin and epoxy, we're doing a lot of fun things with. And really high-end, high-quality, not just teaching skills through learning how to complete these various projects, but really stuff like who wouldn't want, one of these handcrafted pens or charcuterie boards. Or I mentioned Harrison and his puzzle. He's made earrings and I love coming to work every week because whether it's Harrison or one of the other students excited to show off their new idea or their completed project or something that they have in the works. When we have visitors, it's their favorite place to come and see the creative space because
I think there's
a lot of fun things to see there.
I think having you back on the show and actually doing it in the creative space so that we see some of the things that are taking place. I think that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. I actually thought about that, Dory, but what I did do is I have this particular pen. We recorded one of our students just yesterday making this on the lathe. And so if you go to our Instagram account, I'm not a social media guy, but we do have an Instagram for Expressions of Ingenuity, and you can watch a little video and you can really see and imagine how, if you know anything about mindfulness and how to be mindful, you have to be in the present moment.
So what's the Instagram account for people so they can find it?
Expressions of Ingenuity.
Expressions of Ingenuity. Okay.
I mean, that's it. I don't know. I'm embarrassing myself. I hate social media, but I love promoting my students. But if you search that, I'm sure you'll find
it. I'll find it and I'll put it on. I'll put a link on the site so people can easily find it.
As always, I appreciate your help. But yeah, I mean, we make skateboards. And again, it's in its infancy stages. I just had a student, just as I was walking in to start on the show, he showed me a t-shirt. So this is a young man who has some significant challenges in finding employment. He loves husky dogs and dog sledding. So he had a perfect match working for a company that takes tourists in Utah out dog sledding.
Oh, wow.
But then when there were some issues where that wasn't working out, we've gravitated to photography. And so we're going to be posting some of his portraits up and people can buy a picture to hang on their living room wall, but we also are turning these pictures into t-shirts and greetings cards and different items. And so, you know, you go look at our website, the expressionsofingenuity.com, see what we have now, but keep looking because we're growing month by month, and it's just fun for me and for our students, you know, just to diversify and really see them, you know, high quality stuff that when given the right opportunity and the right support, these otherwise sometimes unemployable young adults can really produce results.
I also want to make sure that people know how to reach you for your New Perspectives program, because that's where these students come to you first and then are, you know, have all these opportunities. So you're located in Utah. It's for young adults, 18 and over, basically. And what's the best way for people to find information what's the best way for them to connect with you, Justin?
Just look at our website. It's npya.net, New Perspectives Young Adults.net. Okay. And Don Bauer, as you mentioned, is our admissions person.
Yep.
And so the number on there will connect you with Don. And she'd be happy to talk to you more about our program if you look at our website and think this might be a good fit for you.
And then let's once again talk about the new Expressions website.
Expressions of Ingenuity.
Expressionsofingenuity.com.
.com. And that's just our online store. So if you can't make it to the farmer's market here in Provo, you can still buy these fantastic items that, like you mentioned, would make a great Christmas gift. Buy someone a pen or a set of earrings.
Well, and I think, you know, just having things that are handmade and, you know, are kind of one of a kind, you know, also can bring real value to the gift itself, as well as supporting, you know, your students there.
No, we employ our neurodiverse, my young adult with autism as he's working his way through college, is one of our mentors over there at the creative space. And for our 25th anniversary, he made my wife and I a set of pens where he took one pine cone and split it down the middle. And I mean, whether it's putting a pine cone in a pen or he took a Harry Potter book and glued all the pages together. So, you know, he's a complete book geek. and I've learned that there are others that, hey, I can have someone make a pen out of my favorite book. So again, they're just doing some really creative and fun things over there.
Well, I really want to thank you for being here today and spending time with me and sharing this, you know, wonderful information You know, again, I will make sure that all of this gets put up on the website so people can easily find you and find the new website with all of your information. And you mentioned that one of your students actually has created his own website.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to promote that as well and share his information. So I'll make sure that I, you know, I get that from you, you know, as well. And on my next trip out to Utah, I would love to come and see everything that you're all doing. It just, you know, makes my heart full.
Anytime, Dora, we love it when you visit. So
thank you so much, Justin.
Thanks for helping us promote again, because it's so important to me. And as we're starting to make progress in getting more product out there to sell, like the potential and the impact on the lives of these young men and young women, the validation they get when someone wants something they made, it's life-changing. So thanks so much for having me on the show and help me promote.
I might be doing a little shopping myself, so I will definitely take a look.
Grab some more coasters. Or a charcuterie board, if I said that right. My staff will laugh at me because I never do.
Good for you. Better than I would do. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, next week, everyone, I want to let you know that we're going to have Mark Azoulay as my guest. He's a psychotherapist and clinical supervisor and an organizational developer. So he'll be here December 9th at 12 noon Mountain Time. And Mark's going to talk about different types of masculinity and actually talking about toxic masculinity. So please listen in. He will have a lot to share. And I want to leave you today with my saying, this is from Dr. Wayne Dreyer. I pay attention to my inner callings and apply my own uniqueness to everything I undertake. I hope that you all celebrate your own uniqueness in everything that you do each day. Thanks for being here, everyone. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.